John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, my colleague and friend. We go immediately to welcome back David Shanker. David served his country well in the State Department these last years, and he is now here to help us understand Iraq. Iraq is the victim of Iranian aggression for these decades. However, it is also a country that is receptive to and mysterious to American eyes. With the decision to leave Afghanistan, Iraq remains an example of what can go wrong and why. David, welcome tonight, and I especially welcome you back from the State Department, where you're liberated to speak. You're now a senior fellow at the Washington Institute. Your many visits to Iraq over these years, David, is it a country that is stabilizing, or is it still asking questions about where it's going? Good evening to you, David.
Good evening. Listen, I think Iraq is incredibly troubled. It has a lot of resources, but is one of the most corrupt countries in the world, and of course is plagued by these Iranian-backed Shiite militias, such as that is planted throughout the region, whether in Yemen or Lebanon and in Syria. There are 100,000 or so of these men who are armed to the teeth and prevent the government of Iraq from exerting sovereignty. And along the way, they are also trying to kill Americans, whether military or diplomatic personnel. So the country has an enormous COVID problem, that is, the public health system cannot get its hands around, and it is failing economically. So this is not a pleasant time for Iraq.
Malcolm?
When the U.S. and Iraq concluded their talks last week about the troop reductions and transitioning U.S. and coalition forces for just to do training and advisory tasks, how do you assess what the administration's strategic goals in Iraq, and how are they perceived by both in Iraq and by Iraq's adversaries?
Well, this was the third strategic dialogue that the United States government held with the government of Iraq. I was at the first two and took part in them. You know, after we killed Soleimani in January of 2020, the Iraqi parliament took a non-binding vote to throw the Americans out, the American military presence out of Iraq. It was non-binding, and all the Iraqi political elite understand that a U.S. military presence is essential. We are there at the invitation of the government of Iraq, and they know that if the United States is not there, the Iraqi military will not be able to prevent the resurgence of ISIS. But we also have that presence there because the Iraqi government, in the face of these 100,000 Iranian-backed Shiite militiamen, has not been able to prevent these Iranian-backed militiamen from targeting both the American military and our embassy in Baghdad. And so we need some troop presence there to ensure our well-being. The government has not undertaken the Vienna Convention obligations to do so. I don't know where the Biden administration is going to come down on this, but if we are going to push back on Iran and the region, we have to have a presence in Iraq. We have to be able to contest the space and fly the flag and have foreign investment. And to be there, we can't cede the country to Iran so that it will be a wholly owned subsidiary of Tehran. What they decided in the strategic dialogue was that they're going to transition, or they have already transitioned, from combat mission to train and equip mission. It remains to be seen how many of the roughly 2,500 U.S. troops will leave. I would imagine it's not going to be a lot of them.
Malcolm, you want to concentrate also on Lebanon. Go ahead, Malcolm.
Yeah, while we have time, there's so much more in Iraq that we'd like to know, and it's rare that we get somebody who's actually been on the ground and seen it. But if you could just explain to us a little bit about what is happening in Lebanon, where they've expanded their maritime border claims, another, 540 square miles, I think they said, of their exclusive economic zone. So what is the goal? Is this a domestic play? Is this really something that is trying to sabotage the talks that are going on, supervised by the U.S.?
Lebanon's an incredibly troubled country as well. Obviously, Hezbollah, the Iranian-backed militia, looms large. They're undergoing a financial collapse. The lira that was pegged to the dollar at $1,500 is now 15,000 lira to the dollar. You have 50% of the people in the country who are now below the poverty line. 25% of them are, 25% of the population is destitute. There was an effort before I actually got to the State Department, undertaken by my predecessor, David Satterfield, to get maritime border talks going between Lebanon and Israel. And he couldn't get there. I managed to get some agreement between Israel and Lebanon on the framework for these talks and kicked off these maritime border talks. The first session was great. Lebanese sitting right across from the Israelis and the Americans in between. A session or two into this, the Lebanese come forward with a claim that it was so maximalist. The Israelis had filed a claim with the UN to the north. The Lebanese have filed one to the south, and you have basically a pie slice. And the solution to this problem is ultimately somewhere beneath in the middle of that pie slice. But the Lebanese came in with this real maximalist maritime demand. And it basically suggests, once again, that the Lebanese leadership have no regard for the well-being of the Lebanese people. This is a country, once again, that is bankrupt. And once they enter into an agreement, establish the borders, then Total, the French company, can go and explore in the areas that likely have natural gas resources. But they cannot do so. And the Lebanese, really, I don't know what they're thinking. But this is either Hezbollah or some of their Christian allies who are pressing these demands. And it's really just a shame for the Lebanese people.
David, does Iran operate in Lebanon without hesitation? Is this open to any element of the Al-Quds or the IRGC?
You mostly don't see them, although you do have visits from senior leadership every now and then. Hassan Nasrallah, the head of Hezbollah, has made clear that they receive sizable budget support from Iran. So it's no secret. And people go back and forth, get training. And of course, Qasem Soleimani, I believe, had been in Lebanon before he arrived in Iraq and was killed there by the Americans back in January.
So Lebanon then is completely open to, as broke and corrupt and despairing as it is, it's completely open to Iran. They pay no penalty for being there operating as bad actors. Is that correct, David?
Well, I wouldn't say pay no penalty. They are sanctioned for supporting terrorism. These are in addition to the nuclear sanctions. And of course, when I was in the State Department, we sanctioned dozens of Hezbollah officials. They're Christian and Sunni allies in Lebanon, including the president of Lebanon's son-in-law, Gibran Basile, for corruption and trucking with Hezbollah. So there's some price to be paid, but obviously sanctions are not a panacea.
We have about a minute, Malcolm, if you can be quick, Malcolm.
So quickly, if you can give an assessment of the aftermath of the explosion at the port and the tremendous drop in economic conditions, the economy shrinking by a quarter, what is the sense of the Lebanese people today towards Hezbollah and towards Iran?
Yeah, well, we have 300,000 homeless people essentially caused by the blast. It's a miracle that only 200 were killed. I think there is enormous anger among the Lebanese people toward their government and certainly toward Hezbollah. It is losing some of its luster at home. Of course, 38% of the people are Shiite. This is the largest Shiite political party. They provide enormous amount of largesse to the Shiite community. But there's a lot of disenchantment with them. They call themselves the Islamic Resistance in Lebanon. They're not doing any resistance. What they've done since 2006, since their war with Israel, is basically help the Assad regime to kill the better part of 500,000 mostly Sunni Muslims in Syria. So Hezbollah is still doing better than all the other groups, Sunni, Shia, Christian, or Druze, but they've certainly lost some of their luster.
David Shanker is senior fellow at the Washington Institute. He served from June of 2019 through the administration January of 2021 as the Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs, Malcolm Hoenlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. I'm John Batchelor.